Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is AppSats Radio, help for partners after sexual betrayal. We talk about it here.
Betrayal trauma.
We are AppSats certified clinical partner specialists and coaches who have been trained to help navigate you through this crisis. There is nothing we won't talk about.
Sometimes listeners want to know about triggers.
I'm dealing with the aftermath of my husband's affairs, and he still works the same job that he did when he was acting out. It's a job that allows him to hide his goings-on and one that he stated was a previous trigger for his acting out. The whole 16 and a half years we've been together, he's acted out. In the beginning, what I thought it was just pornography. It ended up being, I found out 2.5 years ago, he had been with multiple prostitutes. I only found out a very small portion of that until about a month ago. How do you cope with all of that when you still have to deal with unavoidable triggers?
Well, of course you would feel traumatized by hearing all that information. And I gotta tell you, Stephanie, that's a staggered disclosure. That's finding out little bits and pieces about your husband's behavior throughout a time period, making you feel insecure, unsure, and unsafe. So what we gotta do is set up a situation whereby you get with a specialist to do a formal disclosure so you can hear everything at one time in a safe environment.
Oh, welcome to the training program and institute that allows you to stay as safe as possible when you are dealing with this ordeal. Hi, I'm Carol Jurgensen-Sheets, a.k.a. Carol the Coach, and I feel so blessed to be with you today. Right now, I'm out of Indianapolis, Indiana, and there's a beautiful blanket of white snow. And, you know, if you're a partner, it is very, very difficult to be able to, if you will, find the beauty in anything because you've been so traumatized and so affected. But look for the small things. I'm going to ask you to do that. Look for the small things because they matter, you know, and you may say, I don't know, I can't think of anything that I have gratitude for right now. And I'm going to say, you know what? I'm going to ask you to pet your cat or your puppy and feel that love, the warmth of its belly on your body. I'm going to ask you to look into the eyes of your children and notice how gorgeous they are. Or I'm going to say, okay, your life is the pits, but what you're doing at work is invaluable. And focus on what is working in your life and not what isn't. You may have heard me talk about this before. There is this book called Happiness for No Reason by Marcy Shimroff. She's a co-author for the Chicken Soup of the Soul series. She does a lot of them. And she wrote this book about being happy. And she actually did research on it and studied 20,000 people who professed happiness. And the three keys to being happy were people stayed in the moment. They stayed in the present. And let's face it, you're working on staying safe. And so looking at the past and fearing for the future is your MO. However, if you can find safe times to really be in the moment, like right now, right here, you know, I'm here to help you, just here to help you. Our coaches and clinicians are here to help you. Be present for this podcast. The second thing is stay very focused on what are the small things that are working in your life when it feels like your entire life has been devastated. So what's working? Okay, your car's working. Great. The grass is growing. Great. Your fingernails are growing. Great. You get the idea. Look for the little things that are working. And when you do that, you're much more likely to feel happy. And when you are so afraid and so devastated and so depressed and so mad at what's happened to you, balance that with some of the things that are surrounding you that are working. You can do it. And when you do it, and the more you work it, it works. Okay, so that is the second principle that Marcy found in the survey of 20,000 people. The other item that was endorsed by all 20,000 people, besides staying in the moment and looking at what was working, ability to reframe. And reframing means that you take a frame, well, you take a different frame and put it around your issue, your problem, your chaos, your deception. I mean, whatever is going on in your life, put another frame around it and ask yourself two very important things. First, ask yourself, how are you getting through this? What strengths are you using? I know you may feel like you've lost all your strength, but you haven't. And if you're 20 years into this, you know, I talked to a couple today, and she was the sex addict. He was the partner, and they've been together 30 years. And he said, you know, I've been able to forgive her. And she had done some very unforgivable things. You know, just horrific things to him. And he said, I was able to forgive her when I got through my anger, my grief, and my loss. Well, you know, APSATS believes, if you've listened to the show before, you know APSATS believes that there are three phases to work through. First, getting safe and stable. Second, grieving and mourning what you had, what you thought you had, what you wanted to have, what you'll never have. And then three, doing the things that will make you feel better. That may be forgiveness. It may not. I tell partners all the time, you don't have to forget. You don't have to forget. You don't have to forgive. You don't have to forgive. But I also know that if it makes you feel better and you believe you can do it, it's an incredible gift to give yourself. You won't forget. You can't have amnesia, although I have had partners, believe it or not, they've had amnesia. I mean, I have one partner who woke up in the morning and she's making breakfast. She sits down and she kind of zones out and her husband says, what's going on? Are you okay? And her life was such that she had had a discovery 20 years ago, a big discovery. And then 20 years later, he had relapsed again. And it was just too much for her. And he said, honey, what is going on? And she said, she looked up at him. And she said, where am I? And he goes, what? She goes, who are you? And he goes, oh, my God, you've had a stroke. You've had a stroke. I'm calling 911. And he did. And the ambulance came. And they took her to the hospital. And for 8 days, she had, let me see if I can think of the condition. I want to say something very weird like intercostal amnesia, which means that stress creates an episode where you don't have to remember anything. Now, I know as a partner, you may be saying to yourself, whoa, that's what I'd like. I'd like to have amnesia and never wake up from this. But for 7 days, she just didn't know who she was. She didn't know her kids. She didn't know her husband. She kept wondering why she was in the hospital. She wondered if she was going crazy. And then her memory came back, and she was happy. She was happy that her memory came back because at least that was a part of her. So we know this can affect partners in lots of different ways, and there's no same way for anybody. Because APSATS knows that, APSATS also believes that as a partner, you have the right to do whatever you need to do as long as you're not hurting anybody physically. I mean, if you want a separation, get a separation. If you want a divorce, get a divorce. If you want to make it work, and the majority of partners do, go to a partner-sensitive couples therapist and do that early couples recovery work. Now, today, I'm going to be interviewing Clinton and Charity Munoz, and they have a podcast that is amazing. It's restoredtohope.com. And they interviewed me a while back, and then I said, let's get you on the show, too, because they know how difficult it is to restore a relationship after sex addiction has, you know, occurred and recovery has begun. And they want to talk about how important individual help is and when to get it and what each of your roles are in the partnership. They definitely believe, just like I do, that intimacy can be restored, but it's a long process. And I'm not talking sexual intimacy. I'm talking emotional intimacy. You know, we find in a lot of these coupleships, the intimacy was lacking anyway. And then as one could imagine, it really got fractured as a result of the discovery. So I'm excited to talk with them about what couples can do to get healthy. And, you know, we at APSATS come from the premise that you shouldn't do couples therapy right off the bat. Once you've found out, then it's time to do a disclosure. Well, first of all, you need at least 90 days recovery. Then the disclosure, hopefully followed by a polygraph. And then early couples recovery work, think, is most effective, and we found it to be such. So if you're one of those people that really wishes your relationship would be better, no matter what day, week, month, or year you're in since finding out, this show's for you, because it'll give you some helpful tips. And that's why we do the podcast. Now, for many, many, many people, the holidays is really tough. It's tough on the addict and it's tough on the partner. And, you know, there's the saying, fake it till you make it. And that really means you can get through this. Act as if you can enjoy Hanukkah or Christmas. Act as if you can help your kids have a reason for the season. And yet that's a tough concept for partners because so much of what they're doing is acting. You know, they don't know who to talk to. They don't know who to tell. They don't know what to believe. And so they're just trying to get through the day, whether that's at work, whether that's at home, whether that's at church, in the neighborhood. They're just trying to get through it. I know I was just talking with a partner a couple of days ago, and she said to me, I've experienced the last straw. And I said, oh, no, what happened? She goes, the affair partner moved into our neighborhood. And, boy, that makes it really tough. You know, when it's like your whole world is violated anyway, and then when you're very personal, private space is violated, that's rough. And, of course, all those fears of, is she stalking us, you know, what's she doing, come into play. And that's where, again, if you talk with a clinician or a coach who understands the trauma you're going through, how your brain's on overload, we can help you sort that out. Because you have some big decisions to make. And in this situation, she's trying to figure out, do they move or not? She says, I don't want to drive past her house. I don't want my kids seen her kids. She's got lots of reasons to really feel vulnerable. And I'm a big believer that vulnerability can be powerful. But that kind of vulnerability is too much. The good news is she and her husband are talking about it together, and he's 100% behind her. Whatever she wants to do, he's willing to do. And that is the good news, because that means that he is empathizing with her. And certainly you know from my book, Help Her Heal, that it's all about empathy. When an injustice has occurred, for the spouse to have empathy means they can work together and heal a little bit faster. So I got to tell you, I'm super excited. We're going to talk with Clinton and Charity and find out how they mend relationships and what tips they would advise to use. So, guys, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Carol, for having us. We are excited to be here with you and your listeners.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. We feel blessed and honored, and we just love everything that you do and stand for, and Help Her Heal is an amazing, amazing workbook.
Yeah, we've been going through it ourselves.
Oh. Yep.
Oh, excellent. Well, you have worked really hard on the process of helping others to heal, and you do believe in rebuilding intimacy and trust after infidelity. So can you share a little bit about your story, and then we'll ask you, how do you help couples heal?
Mm. Oh, man. There is so much, obviously, we can talk about. For Kara and I, we don't only believe that intimacy can be rebuilt, but that it can thrive, right? You have worked with so many men, and you understand that I believe that intimacy is one of the greatest fears of men, yet it's also one of the greatest desires of men. And so in this process of restoration and healing with our wives, where we are able to, like you said earlier, empathize and build trust, a greater intimacy can be formed to where we can have a foundation for the rest of our lives with our wives, where trust is established. There's no secrets. Everything's fully known. And so we are all about what you do. And for Chair and I, we are so excited that we get to be an example of that. Our story goes back to, I saw pornography the first time at 11 years old. It became an addiction that I brought in my marriage. I tell people that I told my wife enough to not lose my bride, that it was my bride-to-be. And I told her it was a previous struggle, but was not even able to say the word addict because I wasn't there yet. 4 years into our marriage was the second time Charity discovered use of pornography, strip clubs, massage parlors, and it absolutely broke her. She became definitely a victim to betrayal trauma, and her body started shutting down. And that was when I couldn't deny any longer how much it was affecting her, and my addiction was affecting her. And that began the journey of real healing for me and seeking help.
Yeah, and then I decided to also get help, because I realized that just because he was fixing his problem, it wasn't going to fix our marriage and our relationship and our intimacy. And I thought that it would, but I realized that there was a lot of damage done to me. And I needed support as well. He was coming home, sharing all the support that he was getting. And I was like, what about me? You know, what about, I'm glad you're getting freedom and healing, but this has also affected me. And so that began the road to healing for me as well.
Well, that makes sense. And so I'm curious, you know, Charity, how did you initially seek out resources for you? What did you do?
Yeah. In the beginning, I felt so alone, so lost. And I just went onto my Bible app and I typed in pornography. And a couple devos came up, and I saw a story that had related so much to mine. And in that story, she talked about betrayal trauma. And that was the first time I'd ever heard of betrayal trauma. I had heard of codependency, and every time I heard it, I was just like, man, that just doesn't resonate with me. And you could be codependent out there, but for me, I knew I wasn't, and I wasn't responding that way. And so I just started doing a bunch of research, and the more that I learned about betrayal trauma and the effects of it, it just started to normalize my pain. And I realized, wow, I need to talk to somebody about this and I need to understand this more. So I went to go see a certified therapist who was trained on betrayal trauma to come alongside me in that, and started the journey of therapy. But then she also recommended that I get around other women, to be around a support system so that I knew I wasn't alone. And to be honest, I wasn't too happy about that, which may sound silly, but I was pissed. I was pissed that I was going to have to show up to a program for something that I didn't do. And I'm like, I don't know these women. I'm not voluntarily walking up these stairs into a cold, dark room with all these women who I don't know, because I did something to me. It was my husband had done something. It had affected me and hurt me. And so now I have to be here and I have to be uncomfortable and I have to share trauma and shame and all the things that had come with it. And so I started attending a group and support system for women that really helped normalize my situation. It was very vulnerable in the beginning, but it also was perfect for what I needed in that beginning season.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Having the support of other women who had been through it, and meant you didn't have to reinvent the wheel. You got to see some of their strengths and the things that they had learned. Clinton, what did you do to get help right off the bat?
Yeah, you know, initially, like I said before, I really wasn't even okay with the word addict. But at this point, I didn't have the ability to say what I'm okay with or what I'm not okay with. I was about to lose my wife, and we had one child who was, I think, how old was Clint Jr.? 1 year old, something like that. We had a 1 year old. We had one on the way who was, she was 8 months pregnant, and we were just starting off our family. This is, again, we're kind of the young guns in this industry here. I just turned 30, Chair's 29, and so. We weren't raised around, I mean, I think even just now, this is just now becoming apparent. So initially, I sought out a Christ-centered 12-step recovery group. I sought out I don't know if I sought out, but that's a funny story for another time. I got in touch with a therapist who was a CSAT, which, looking back, was the best thing that could have happened. I really needed that understanding and the educational piece of that, rather than just the Christian counseling. I think both played a part, and both played different parts. And then I got a sponsor, which was amazing, and that started the process of healing for me, for sure.
Well, I love everything about what you're doing. Your podcast is amazing. You know, the website is amazing. Restored to Hope, and that's with the number two. What made you decide that you wanted to pay it forward and help other couples? Because you really do believe in the coupleship. Tell us about that.
I'll go first, and then I'll let Charity share. Probably two different perspectives on this for Charity and I. You know, everyone talks about using their pain to a greater purpose, and so Restored to More was really birthed in the idea that we needed to learn about the coupleship along with the healing individually. So we are advocates for the men going and finding their own programs and their own therapists, and the women finding their own therapists and their own help. But we also think that there is a need in the industry for couples to have another couple that just says, I get it. That says, I want to be with you and I'm willing to walk this journey with you. We looked high and low for that couple. I would ask guys in my circles, hey, can you and your wife sit down with us? Can we talk? And there just weren't couples that were willing to head this on and be almost that sponsor couple for another couple. Our word is a mentor couple, somebody who's been there and who gets the pain, gets the depth, and is willing to not necessarily be that voice of expertise, but that voice of normalization. We needed a couple to normalize what we were going through as a couple, and that's why Restored to More was created, so that we could be that for other couples right now.
Yeah, we really just wanted to be that safe couple for other couples. And I remember, God placed it on my heart before he placed it on Clinton's heart. So I had to be very patient. but it happened, gosh, even I think God placed it on my heart and was like, hey, I want you to start a podcast. I want you to start writing a workbook. And I was like, whoa, where'd that come from? And so I started writing a workbook, and just, it was more so journaling just my process and what I was learning at the time. And then I just closed the computer, let it sit there. And then about, I think, a year and a half, 2 years later, Clinton was like, hey, you know, I feel like I need to come alongside you and help you out. Like, what do you want to do?
What's your vision?
What's your vision? And I told it to him. And the next day we bought the podcast equipment and it's been off running with the horses ever since. But I think it's like what Clinton said, you know, we really just, we wish we had another safe couple that we could just talk to. You know, we don't believe we're professionals. We don't believe we know it all. You know, that's what you're here for, Carolyn. We go to you. We point to you. But we really believe that we can just, if we could just be that safe person to say yes, like talk to us, you know, communicate to us, because we just, there was a trial and error for us. I mean, I thought I was supposed to be Clinton's accountability partner, and there was just so many things that were unknown to us that we wish we could have just run to another couple and said, hey.
Is this normal?
Yeah.
Gosh, we're freaking out right now. What's going on? Why is this happening? Is this normal, right? So.
Yep.
Well, and, you know, I'm so sorry when I said restore to hope, but it's restore to mole, M-O-R-E.
Oh, that's okay,
and
yeah.
I'm looking at your site, and you have some statistics that I'm fully aware of, but I don't know that everybody who's listening is. You say that 21 million women betrayal trauma linked to infidelity, and that's a lot of women. And that 40% of those relationships end in divorce when infidelity takes place. And then, of course, 40 million American people regularly visit porn sites, and pornography increases marital infidelity by more than 300%. And that is so true. What we put in our brains affects us. And so men and women both are encouraged to explore and use pornography, and they have no idea how they're damaging their brains. And it's always been tough for me because my training as a CSAT says, stay porn neutral. And for me, that means treat anybody who is experiencing pornography and wants help with that, but don't shame, blame, or judge the act of pornography. And if somebody does want to use it, and they explain that there are couples that don't have any type of sex addiction or sexual compulsivity. And I went with that for a couple of years. I, you know, tried to stay porn neutral. I actually hadn't given it much thought. So I really thought about it. And, of course, the more I worked in this population, the more and more and more I saw that I couldn't stay neutral about pornography. I feel like it's very damaging to the head, heart, and soul of anybody who uses it, and, of course, anybody who's affected by it. And so I am not porn neutral. I know that pornography typically happens between 9 and 5 during the day. So a lot of the men and women that are looking at pornography are doing it at work. They're also risking their livelihoods. And what is heartbreaking is that it desensitizes anybody to what true spirituality is and what true intimacy is. So can you share a little bit about your feelings on pornography and how it affects couples?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll go first. I know Charity wants to add some value here too. We love being transparent. Cher and I, our whole ministry is based off just us sharing our story, because our goal is that other couples can go, I get it, and I'm there. And that's our hope, is that other men who are hearing this and women, their spouses, can go, man, I wonder if that's happening for my husband. And husbands can maybe even confess something that they've been holding on to that is causing a disruption in their intimacy. When I was looking at pornography on a regular basis, I was having what's called addicted sex, where I was trying to consistently live out what I experienced on a computer screen. And I wasn't able to view Charity as the beautiful creation that she was, but she became an object of pleasure, an object for me to actually cope with my life and the emotions that were unwanted. Pornography was where I ran to. Pornography became so bad in my life, and the addiction of masturbation paired with it, that I really believe that if anybody really knew me, I would not be accepted. I would not be loved. And so as an altar course to intimacy, which again, we say intimacy, and I want to clarify, that's just being known. Intimacy is being, it's into me you see, and it's into you I see, and it's basically being fully known And we can only be fully loved when we are fully known. And so when we create a false representation of who we want to be to other people, it just emphasizes that you wouldn't be loved if you were really known. And pornography, because of the act, we know that these most women are attracted into this industry. We know that there is child things that go on with child pornography. Most companies that elicit, even if the person is willing to be in a pornographic scene, there are definitely pains and damages. We don't think that anybody really wakes up and says, I want to do this for a living. And most of those people go through abuse like crazy. So I think I knew that. And I think most guys that struggle know that. So they know that there is a depth to this pornography that is ugly, that's dark. And for us to admit to using it for our own personal gain is extremely hard. And we do risk being judged. We risk being shamed. And at times in my life, I was judged and I was shamed. And that only made me believe I wouldn't be loved. But later on, when I found safe people to share that with, oh my goodness, the intimacy that I was able to have with Charity, because she took time to understand addiction. She took time to understand that this wasn't about her. It was affecting her, but she was not the reason at all that I was going to pornography again and again and again.
Yeah, I don't believe you can't, if you're trying to solve something or fix something and you don't understand it, then I don't believe you're going to get freedom and healing from it. Mm. Because you gotta learn the beast, right? You gotta learn what you're dealing with. You gotta learn the war you're up against. And we were really naive to understanding the effects of what porn does to your brain, your body, your relationships, everything. And I think it's because our society does a really great job at justifying, hey, guys are horny, guys have needs, they need it, you know, like it's normal, everybody does it. But yeah, we don't understand what happens to the brain when we're viewing pornography because we don't talk about it. And I wish that when men, children, everyone, you know, when they click on that image to view pornography, I wish it had all the side effects of what's going to happen before you watch, just like you're watching, you know, TV and it says, well, if, you know, you take this medicine, beware of blah, 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 and it goes on and on and on and on for like 2 minutes of all the side effects that could possibly happen from taking this medication. And I wish pornography had that, because people are just, I think there's a lack of education out there of understanding what it really does to your brain, how many neurochemicals go off that are similar neurochemicals that are experienced of a drug that's cocaine. And when I realized that, I was mind blown. I was like, oh my gosh, we're not just dealing with, like, because a lot of people say, hey, we'll just stop doing it. Just stop looking, like put up a block or two. It's fine. You know, just
even
be
you
a man.
Thought I could do that. Even you were like, why is this guy, I'm pretty, what's going on? I'll give him sex.
Yes.
What's up?
I did not understand it. But once I realized, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's like my husband is, you know, a coke addict. Well, I wouldn't just be saying, hey, stop doing it. We would be treating it very differently because of the side effects, and we would realize a stronghold that it has on him. And so once I started realizing and educating myself about what porn does to the brain and the body and relationships, it gave me so much healing for myself and also our relationships, because it had totally even damaged our sex life. I don't even think people talk about that. Pornography totally damages a sex life in your bedroom, and you can't say that it doesn't, because, you know, whether that's erectile dysfunction or it's, you know,
more of a transaction in sex.
Yeah, there's so many times I remember him telling me, like, hey, I just can't do this today. And I remember him just maybe even starting to weep and cry or get mad at himself because it just wasn't happening the way that we thought it would happen. And it was because of pornography. It had damaged our marital bedroom. So it is damaging. And I hope that more people can take the time to understand that, so that you know what you're dealing with and you can treat it and find healing. Yet also at the same time, the women will have a deeper compassion for their husband, realizing what had happened to them whenever they viewed it, maybe at the age 8, 9, 10, 11, whenever they did.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I just so appreciate your take on this. Now, let me ask you, obviously I heard about the workbook. Tell our listening audience about the workbook and who needs to use it.
Yeah, so we have, we've gone on a journey of trying to figure out what resources to create first. And the workbook is in the rough stages right now, so it hasn't been published yet. I really appreciate the publicity. Thank you so much, Carol. And so we've kind of changed our effort from the workbook over to just our book and our story. That's going to be filled with transparency. We fill with just a raw story of what happened. And that's going to be released later in 2021. So we don't have a date on that yet. For right now, what we are going to be looking at, and you can check our website out for, is in 2021, in the beginning, we're going to be doing a workshop, which will be really awesome. We'll be talking about the 12 keys to intimacy through a restoration. And that'll be exciting. So keep on the lookout for that.
Okay, I thought I heard somebody say that they had a workbook, and I was like, okay, I want to hear about this. You know me, I love workbooks.
Yours is enough. For everyone would buy ours, please buy Carol's.
Well, thank you. So, how can they find out about this workshop that you're going to be having in the future?
Yes, and I have been working on a workbook. It is just in the editing phase. So it's a lot about betrayal trauma, a lot of from the woman's perspective, and just sitting in the pain, understanding it, then understanding him, and then how to find purpose in your pain is really the ending of it. So there is a workbook. It's just edited, and there's nowhere you can access it, but it's there on my computer, so I have access to it. But thank you. And, so our workshops, we're very excited. Everything, because of the day and age that we're in right now with COVID, it is online. So we are going to be doing a workshop for couples, and we're really excited about it because we know what it will do for other couples to be around other couples. Mm-hmm. It's going to breed safety, and it's going to help them know that they're not alone. And we really just want to create a safe community of couples where they can share their stories, be connected to other couples, know that they're not alone. And then Clinton and I just want to share some of the things that we have learned and grown from, and just kind of even what the expectations of the restoration journey is going to look like. Because I wish somebody would have given us that, you know, hey, this is what to expect. You are about to ride a roller coaster of emotions, and I can't tell you when you're going to get off. It is going to be a long ride, and there's going to be so much that you're going to learn about each other. And just even talking about, you know, in that restoration journey, on that roller coaster journey, you know, when you're both in individual therapy and you're both getting individual help, you are both learning so much. And it can be all-consuming and overwhelming at times. And so I remember, you know, just looking at Clinton, and every day we'd be sharing new things, but in the moment, we just weren't ready for that information that we were sharing with each other. It's not that we didn't want to hear it. We just weren't ready because we were so still wounded and damaged. And so we just talk about kind of setting up proper expectations for when it's appropriate to talk and kind of have a game plan of course, we want you guys to share with each other because that's going to rebuild intimacy and trust in your relationship. But there's a proper time to share your hurts and your woundedness and what you're learning in individual therapy and groups, because at times it can just seem so overwhelming. And you want the information that you're sharing with the other person to be received well. Yeah. So that's just one thing that we will be sharing in our workshop.
Well, and, you know, I know that you really believe in self-care. You feel like that's absolutely essential. The healing. Can you both share a little bit about that? How can men and women alike increase their self-care?
Yeah, we are very big advocates for self-care. We believe that during this journey, there's a lot of things that are essential. We don't call it necessarily a program, but there is a game plan that we think is essential to finding healing. And one of those things is realizing that we are all needy and needful. We just did a post on this week, that's all about this. That just talks about the understanding that I have needs and Charity has needs. And really, most arguments arise in a marriage relationship when we have expectations that aren't verbalized, right? They're uncommunicated expectations. And so it's not wrong to have those, but we can't expect our wife to know them if we haven't communicated them. So understand that we're needy. We have to take time for our own selves. As a guy, I need to take time to be with other men that I can be intimate with, that I can, again, not sexually, but be known and have in-depth conversations. Charity, we have three little boys, and Charity will often say, babe, you need to go get some testosterone at your own level. You need to go golfing. You need to go hit some golf balls, hit a bucket of balls. You need to go play tennis. You need to go surfing. You need to go do something with some other guys or even by yourself so that you can be refueled. The idea is that our phone is constantly dying throughout the day from the minute we unplug it. And we're the same way. From the moment we wake up to the moment we go to bed, we only have so much emotional, physical, mental capacity. And during that restoration process, those things are being zapped like crazy because we saw a therapist, we had a phone call, we had a slip, we had a trigger. And so this even, it's almost like during this restoration process, you're streaming live video the entire time. Your battery is going down quick. So you have to do things to replenish that so that you can be available emotionally, mentally, spiritually for your wife, for your kids. And that's what self-care is all about, doing life-giving activities.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, obviously, you've lived this process. You know what's worked for you. And in working with other people, you've recognized the need for, you know, information about self-care, information about expectations, when to discuss things, when not to, boundary setting, triggers. Tell me a little bit about what you advise couples when it comes to triggers, because we know that triggers can occur for absolutely no reason. And when a man watches his wife being triggered, he gets triggered because, of course, it reminds him that he's done something to her in the past that's showing up in the present.
Yes, totally. And what's crazy is if you don't get educated first, then you're not even going to understand triggers. And the best advice I could give somebody is to have a game plan prior to when the triggers arise. And what I mean by that is, you know, when a trigger arises, Clinton and I both know what we both need to do individually and what we need to do together so that we can bridge safety back in our relationship and ourselves so that we can process throughout the entire day and go on with our day. Because triggers can make you feel like you're crazy and go back to square one. And so the goal is, right, to get you back to safety, get you back to planet Earth so that you can be able to function again.
Yeah.
And the best thing that I want to speak for my husband that he did for me whenever a trigger arises is he says, "Hey, Charity, I totally understand, you know, your trigger." You know, he doesn't try to say like, "Oh, well, you shouldn't be feeling that." He lets me feel. He starts having empathy for me and he communicates to me and he says, "Hey, whatever you need right now in order to feel safe, let me know.
Yeah.
If you need me to do this, let me know." And he'll do, he's never defensive because defensive will make me angry and it makes me feel like, yeah, well, how dare you?
You know, two weeks ago, I went and I played tennis and the lights, later after our kids were in bed. And so I went out at about 8 o'clock to play tennis, 8 to 10. Well, my phone has a Life 360 app where she can track everything. And for whatever reason, I think my kids had my phone and they had turned off the data use for my phone entirely. So I come back home from playing this great game of tennis with my buddies. I'm coming back and I stink like I played tennis, and Charity is on the bed and she is furious. And this is 2 weeks ago, Carol. She's angry. She's so mad. And I'm like, "Charity, what is going on?" She goes, "Well, how do I know you played tennis? How do I know you didn't go to a strip club? How do I know you didn't just go and meet up with somebody?" And I'm like, "Okay, what happened?" She goes, "Well, your phone was off. I tried to call you. It didn't act," like all this stuff. And I said, you're right. I could have grabbed cash. I could have done this. I get it. I see what you're saying. So what do I have to do right now to show you that I was there? Do I need to call the friends I played with and have them tell you that I was there from this time to this time?" And we went through this whole thing, and I did. I called that person. I proved to her that I was at that place at that time doing what I said. But they can happen tomorrow, and we don't ever pretend like we're through this. That was 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a matter of radical transparency, yeah, radical vulnerability to say, "Hey, I'm not going to dismiss your trigger. I'm going to do whatever I can right now to help you understand that what I'm saying is true, but you don't have any right to believe it. I've taken that away. So I have to prove to you however I can." And that's what we do.
Wow. And, you know, that's so honest and courageous for you to share that story, because you two are pillars in this community for helping people heal. And you can see where a trigger can just come from nowhere and or...
Yeah.
Come from that phone
yes.
not working properly, you know,
yeah.
and
yeah.
it makes you scared. And so you did a really nice job of acknowledging her feelings and accepting the fact that, of course, she would be triggered. And what can you do right then and there? How does that end up making you feel, Charity?
Oh, my gosh. Well, it helped me come back to planet Earth, and it helped me be like, okay, like, thank you for acknowledging my pain. Thank you for acknowledging that I'm not crazy, even though my actions may seem crazy right now, because that's what happens when a trigger, you like just go crazy. And so it made me feel not crazy anymore. And it brought all my walls down and it allowed me to feel safe and to trust him. Because when he responds like that, then I'm going to trust him, because he's saying, hey, look at me. I'm willing to do whatever it takes to share with you my night, you know, whatever that looks like for you, I will do anything. And that immediately just, you know, was like, okay, like in this moment, he helped me regain the strength that I needed to become myself again and to realize, okay, like, yeah, I'm not crazy and I trust you. And it helped me feel safe. It helped me feel secure. And it really rebuilt another block on, you know, our house.
Infrastructure of trust.
Yeah.
Our building of trust.
Yeah.
It was demolished after D-Day.
Yep.
Oh, I get that. Absolutely. And for you to know that makes a lot of sense, Clinton, that you're constantly reminded of it and you know it, accept it, and you're building it back one block at a time. And that is what triggers are all about. It's about him helping her to feel safe again, because that trigger is a message that you're not safe. So I appreciate that that's how you handle things. Tell me, guys, how do you believe that you rebuild trust after, you know, you've had such instability with the infidelity?
Yeah. You know, I think the key to trust is transparency.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's involving her at a certain time when she can in the process of healing, and vice versa as well. I think the way the guy builds trust is by no longer having a defensive, no longer having the argument of mentality, releasing the rights, in my opinion, of what should be. When my wife said, hey, I would like to have a tracking app, I'd like to take all the cash, I'd like everything to be on the computer for all of the credit card and debit card purchases, I'd like to be in charge of XYZ, there was no defense. And that's where you start, by saying, okay, I get it. And even a willingness, not a fine, but a willingness to go, I get it. I want you to do whatever you have to do to feel that. And then in the process of restoration, what we found built trust was me opening up to a certain level that is healthy about the recovery process. It doesn't mean that she's my accountability partner. I'm not going to her saying, oh my gosh, Charity, I'm so triggered right now, let's have sex. That wouldn't build trust at all. It's what, hey, I want to tell you what I learned today in therapy, or I want to say what I learned. What we did is we realized that there was so much learning and going on that we didn't have the capacity for each other every day. But we set aside time once a week where we could talk about what we learned that week in the restoration process. And we, you know, I don't recommend this to everybody if they have certain struggles, but we would pop open a bottle of wine, we'd play some cards, and a lot of times we just sat there and drank wine and played cards quietly. But it was that togetherness. It was being physically next to each other. We didn't hold hands for months afterward. We didn't kiss for months afterward. We didn't engage in sex for probably about 7 months after Discovery Day happened. But so there was a lot of, okay, we can still be around each other, and I want to do things that make her feel safe. Again, what you said, it's all about safety. Safety builds trust, right? Because we feel we can trust it if it's safe. So it's those kinds of actions in the process of recovery that we think are important.
Yeah.
Well, that absolutely makes sense. And, you know, from an APSAT standpoint, and this is an APSAT-sponsored show, we believe that safety and stabilization is that first phase to get through. And you just demonstrated how somebody can be going through that at the time of discovery and then get better and maybe grieve and mourn the loss and be angry and kind of work through that. And then something triggers them back into the first stage. And it's a dance that betrayal trauma causes until the intensity and frequency gets better and better and better. And again, you two are in that restoration phase where you're giving back and you're wanting to help and you're making such a difference. And I want to remind people that their website is www.restoredthenumber2more.com. Their podcast link is on that website, but it's also known as Restored to More. And you have a YouTube channel, don't you?
We do.
We
it's also called Restored. the number two more, which you can find on there.
Yeah, we just did a video today on self-care, so it's perfect.
We like to do little vlogs where they're about 3 to 5 minutes, and they're just a nugget of wisdom, just encouraging other couples on the journey.
Oh, excellent. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. I want to have you back on so we can talk about that all-important boundary issue that so many couples have difficulty with. But you have a happy holiday, and we'll catch up with you in 2021 for more of your wisdom and really just more of your insights, because you live this and you want to help couples, and that's very, very obvious. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
All right, you guys, take care.
Take care, Carol. Have a great day. Thanks again.
All righty. So obviously, a young couple, 29 and 30, and if you look at their website, they're adorable. I can say that, I'm 65. And they're just amazingly honest, open, and transparent. And that's what everybody's looking for, right? Are people that are open and honest and transparent that do the next right thing. So I hope they inspired you, and I want you to be thinking about, what would it look like if I got to the other side? If I knew my strengths, I started giving back, and I felt more confident about myself. That's the first place we go, confidence in yourself. Maybe it'll be in the coupleship someday, maybe it won't, but you can always have confidence in yourself. I'm Carol Jurgensen-Cheek, a.k.a. Carol the Coach, and we'll see you next week for more Betrayal Recovery Radio right here through APSATS. Make it a good week.
For more information, go to APSATS.org, the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists, to find a professional in your area who is trained to help you after sexual betrayal.